Welcome to the Radio Detective Story Hour podcast. You can find all of my podcasts since 2005 on the website, and while there, leave a comment at rdsh.otr.com, or you can send me an email to otrpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to send me a tweet, my Twitter account is @radiodetective. Finally back for another podcast. I apologize for the time gap, but this time of year tends to force me to shift my projects, and some have to become lower priority, this podcast being one of them. For this episode, I want to return to one of my favorite journalist as detective series, Nightbeat. I've featured it twice over the years this podcast has been around. This time I want to focus on one of my favorite episodes from that series, Julie the Jukebox Girl. As a series, Nightbeat, aside from the plot, always created unique characters that would interact with reporter Randy Stone. Most of these characters lived in the shadows of the night and the events that occurred at that time of day. I think what fascinated me about the series was how it presented the lives of these shadow individuals. It was a time foreign to myself, albeit somewhat exaggerated for dramatic effect, filled with sometimes sympathetic, sometimes seamy people who lived desperate lives in a large city. The characters were quite well defined and always carried a character flaw within themselves. Here's the reporter describing some of the characters he nightly encounters.
Well, the night is filled with its own brand of people. The lonely, lost, screwy, mixed-up people of the night. Drifting out of the darkness like fragments of a nightmare.
Mister, you look like a decent sort. You don't want a poor, suffering human being to go hungry for want of a dime.
Yeah, a disembodied hand stretched out for that ever-loving coin to buy just another whiff of that fine old anesthetic named Muscatel. Or a brittle laugh of a painted tootsie rising out of the night, proving to the world she doesn't care, laughing until the tears come. Or the flurry of footsteps rushing by, a muffled conversation deciding life or death or tonight's movie. An ambulance racing past on its way to General Hospital, its red warning light flashing on and off quickly, like the frenzied pulse beat of the poor devil inside.
The series title reflected two meanings, a reporter and the beat he covered for the newspaper. Nightbeat is also about how the ebb and flow of the night is like a beating drum of low life and misery. In Julie, the jukebox girl lives a lonely fellow who has become enamored of the voice of a girl he hears on a jukebox. Georgie is a dwarf who lives in the night, perhaps hiding from his deformity, making a living selling newspapers on the street. But like any human, he has feelings, and those feelings are for Julie, an ethereal voice from a jukebox, a live voice, but a disembodied one. Reminiscent of our lives today, which are full of internet interactions, Julie is nice to Georgie but has never seen him. Neither knows anything about the other except the sound of their voices, and through the jukebox, the two voices bond.
George headed straight for the only bit of brightness in the room, a gleaming aluminum jukebox in the corner. In the center of the jukebox was a neon mouth, and within the mouth, a microphone. Other neons spelled out the message, "Ask your tune." It operated like your telephone. Somewhere a girl sat at a switchboard connected to 50 such jukeboxes and taverns all over the city. George stood glaring at his tiny reflection in the jukebox shiny chrome.
I hate it. I'd like to smash it to pieces.
What, the jukebox?
The owner of this joint, he gave me a key so I could come in and get warm on cold nights.
Yeah?
Only you can see for yourself when you're alone. This place can give you the creeps. I thought maybe a tune would cheer me up, so I started horsing around with this jukebox, feeding it my loose nickels, like this. And then her talking to me.
What tune would you like?
It's me, Julie.
Oh, hello, darling.
Darling?
I'm so excited. George, just one more hour. So help me, I've got goose pimples.
Yeah. Me too, Julie.
We'll do it just like we planned. I certainly can understand your feelings, and I admire you for them. Say, before the boss catches me spooning, I better play a record.
Not a record, Julie. The record.
The record, George.
Julie, an equally lonely shadow, falls for Georgie's voice and kindness. She talks of her excitement in meeting him. But as the series reminds us, the night is an artificial world of what if, and is in reality a mantle that covers what actually is and becomes a mask of potential evil. The evil comes in the form of another strongly written character played by William Conrad, one John Bruce, actor. An egotistical, but underneath it all, insecure nightcrawler who taunts Georgie to the point of possible homicide. And through all of these well-defined characters, the reporter observes their flaws and finds himself swept into the events of their lives. Just as radio in its early days were disembodied voices that entered our homes and through its dramatic presentations took listeners on flights of fantasy beyond the everyday events of their lives, Georgie and Julie live in their own fantasy world of love. Georgie imagines Julie to be a glamorous woman, just as Julie thinks Georgie is a handsome, normal man. Their voices, however, have become doors to their personalities within, and they seem satisfied to continue to live with that alone. Nightbeat had other episodes that also gave us glimpses into the lives of these nighttime people. And through it all, reporter Randy Stone was there to guide us, the listeners, into the shadows for us to experience. The series was well conceived and well written for the most part, and stories such as Julie the Jukebox Girl were fascinating dramas of the night.
Yeah, that's how it is when you walk the Nightbeat. You always know that if you walk far enough and long enough, and if you keep your eyes open and you listen very carefully, sooner or later in the darkness, you'll find the city's heart.
Here now is Julie, the Jukebox Girl, from May 18th, 1951.
Is it a sin? Is it a crime? Loving you, dear, like I do. If it's a crime, then I'm guilty.
NBC presents Frank Lovejoy in Night Beat. Hi, this is Randy Stone. I cover the Night Beat for the Chicago Star. Yep, I cover the night. My beat is about 8 square miles of darkness, and, mister, that's a lot of night. Every evening I start walking into it and let it swirl around me and let it swallow me up. Part of me relaxes, part of me becomes tense and wary. Like a hunter coming back to the jungle, I feel at home, but I know that there's danger. Well, the night is filled with its own brand of people. The lonely, lost, screwy, mixed-up people of the night, drifting out of the darkness like fragments of a nightmare.
Mister, you look like a decent sort. You don't want a poor, suffering human being to go hungry for want of a dime.
Yeah, a disembodied hand stretched out for that ever-loving coin to buy just another whiff of that fine old anesthetic named Muscatel. Or a brittle laugh of a painted Tootsie rising out of the night, proving to the world she doesn't care. Laughing until the tears come. With a flurry of footsteps rushing by, a muffled conversation deciding life or death or tonight's movie. An ambulance racing past on its way to General Hospital, its red warning light flashing on and off quickly, like the frenzied pulse beat of the poor devil inside.
Randy Stone, Demon Reporter. Hiya, R.S. How's the old crusader?
Night is for the phony, too, like this character coming toward me while I was grabbing a bite in the little restaurant next to the radio and TV studios. The actor, on stage 24 hours a day.
You mind if I sit down next to you, baby? What do you say? How's the kid, huh?
Oh, the kid's fine. Teething like mad. Nothing serious.
Barrel of laughs, this character. Real sense of humor. You know, I love that column of yours, baby. With me, it's like a shot of Benzedrine.
Uh-huh.
The only lack I find in it is that I never see any mention of, guess whom?
Whom?
John Bruce, the world's greatest thespian. Also available for Wake's weddings and beer busts.
You couldn't see your way clear to letting go of my sleeve so I can finish my coffee.
How do you like this citizen? He can insult you till you curl up and die and you still love him. Look, I know the minute I'm out of your sight you're going to forget me, so I'm going to give you this little postcard to hang on to. If your show can stand a boost, ask for the lad they call John Bruce. Well, it rhymes anyway.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. I gotta be going now.
Remember, baby, I don't mind what you say as long as you say something, huh?
Yeah.
That's Bruce spelled with a B.
I know it's spelled with a B. A great big beautiful hunk of zero. The sincere brown eyes continually shifting, sizing you up and figuring you out. The friendly smile so phony you look for the safety pins holding it in place. Ah, relax. It's a big night. You walk half a block and John Bruce is lost forever. Because there's always something waiting up ahead. I just turned down Grand Avenue. Oh, now there's one of the night's chilly little sounds for you. A burglar alarm shattering the quiet. I looked down the dark, empty street trying to figure out which store. And I saw a child come darting out of a doorway. Began racing the other way. A child.
Hey, stop! Stop!
I tried racing after it, but there wasn't a chance. I went back to the store. It was a sporting goods place. One window smashed and blood splattered on the glass like the kid had used his naked fist to get to the display of guns and knives inside. After the cops came and I told them what I knew, I continued my wanderings. Down through the Lincoln Park District and up through Honky Tonk Road. Wild neon signs making the night bleed red and green and purple. And then the little jazz combos beating their brains out. And the barkers, their gold teeth flashing as they bang their canes against the sidewalk and shout about the 12 dancing girls waiting just for you. And they all gent hawking popcorn and hot tamales in a little child's wagon. And George, the 35-inch dwarf who sold newspapers at Clark and Knight. Evening, Georgie. How's it going?
Fine and dandy. Better than good. Always A1 for little Georgie.
Give me the Sun Times. Always good to see what the competition's up to.
There you are. Paper, read all about it. Get your paper.
Oh, that's a lovely headline. Paper. One of those silly jerks going to wake
get
up.
Get evening paper.
Hey, George. Maybe the way things are in the world, this is a good idea, but since when have they started printing the paper in blood?
Huh? What are you talking about?
Look for yourself, smeared all over.
That's the way I got it. Here, I'll give you another.
Thank you.
Now let go of my hand.
It's soaking through the bandage, George.
I cut myself in a can opener.
Mm-hmm. I hope you went to a doctor.
Doctor?
You've got to get all the glass
out. I got all the... I told you it was a can opener.
All I saw in that window was guns and knives. I thought it was a kid.
Okay. So you got yourself a story. Get on the phone. Call the cops. What are you waiting for?
Waiting for you to start telling me why a sweet guy is acting like such a dope. What is it, Georgie?
Almost 1 o'clock. A little more than an hour and she'll be here. Go on. Call the cops. Call the cops. You'll be doing me a favor. If you don't, I'll kill him. I swear I'll kill him.
She'll show up in an hour and you'll kill him. Kid, you lost me.
All right, Mr. Stone. You're a good guy. You're entitled to a laugh. Come on. Follow me.
He dumped his papers onto the stand and started across the street. 35 inches of desperate humanity. I followed him around back and down the stairs of an old tenement. He stopped at a basement door to fish out a key. I followed him inside a dark, dank hole. He flicked a switch. Fluorescent lights hissed on, throwing a coal white glow over walls draped in black velvet. There were dark booths and a small bar. It was empty and deathly quiet. I knew the establishment, an after-hours joint. When all the legitimate bars close, those who still sought refuge from the night come to places like this. George headed straight for the only bit of brightness in the room, a gleaming aluminum jukebox in the corner. In the center of the jukebox was a neon mouth, and within the mouth, a microphone. Other neons spelled out the message, "Ask your tune." It operated like your telephone. Somewhere a girl sat at a switchboard connected to 50 such jukeboxes and taverns all over the city. George stood glaring at his tiny reflection in the jukebox shiny chrome.
I hate it. I'd like to smash it to pieces.
What, the jukebox?
The owner of this joint, he gave me a key so I could come in and get warm on cold nights.
Yeah?
Only you can see for yourself when you're alone. This place can give you the creeps. I thought maybe a tune would cheer me up, so I started horsing around with this jukebox, feeding it my loose nickels, like this. And then her talking to me.
What tune would you like?
It's me, Julie.
Oh, hello, darling.
Darling?
I'm so excited. George, just one more hour. So help me, I've got goose pimples.
Yeah. Me too, Julie.
We'll do it just like we planned. I certainly can understand your feelings, and I admire you for them. Say, before the boss catches me spooning, I better play a record.
Not a record, Julie. The record.
The record, George.
Okay, you can start laughing anytime you want, Mr. Stone.
What's this all about, George?
10 seconds of conversation with every record. It started as a gag, me playing the big lover because she couldn't see she was talking to a dwarf. It's a big joke, huh? On me. Because talking to her every night, I don't know. Something started happening to me inside. Happening to both of us because she felt it too. She really did, Mr. Stone. I mean, an understanding. I don't know the word. She felt it, too. And then he had to ruin it. Destroy it!
Yes, it was soap opera at its sudsiest. The little dwarf and his love affair with Julie the jukebox girl. So help me, Georgie even invented an invalid wife. That was his reason why he and Julie could never meet except through the jukebox. But like all little melodramas taken from life, there was also a villain. One of the men who worked in this joint happened to overhear George spilling his heart out. And as a gag, when George wasn't around, he told Julie that the poor guy was dying to meet her in person, that they should get together at least once. And that's what's scheduled for 2 a.m., huh, this meeting?
Yeah. It was Julie's idea. I mean, the way it's going to be. The record made her think of it.
The record?
Yeah, it's from Tchaikovsky. Is that what they call him?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, he and his baroness, some fancy lady, they had a friendship through letters, and they felt that they had to meet at least once. So one day they passed each other in carriages and nodded without a word and went on. Never saw each other again.
Now, what's good enough for Tchaikovsky is good enough for Georgie and Julie, huh?
Yeah. She'll be wearing a green hat and a sprig of violets. I'll be wearing a red flower. Well, you think she'll be a little surprised at what she's going to see, Mr. Stone? Isn't it a joke? It's okay for you to laugh. Go on, laugh, Mr. Stone. Laugh!
I turned. He was a big, paunchy, bald-headed gent, standing in the doorway, having himself a wonderful
time.
You
lousy rat, I'll kill you! I'll kill you! I'll kill you!
It was right out of Max Sennett, a barrel of laughs. George, the dwarf, charging right into the big guy who merely lifted him up, shrugged his shoulder, and sent the little fellow flying across the room, crashing into a wall.
What a character that little monkey is, huh? Did he tell you about his romance?
So you're Cupid.
That's me. I'm even willing to stake him to that rose for his lapel. Nothing's too good for lover boy. What a line he's got. You gotta hear it to believe it.
I'll get
you! George! The knife in George's hand would have looked much better back in that sporting goods window. He moved out of the shadows. He moved toward the big guy. A trickle of blood ran down George's mouth, but he didn't know anything about that.
Put that knife away or I'll shove it down your throat.
But George kept coming. The smile on the big man's face took a leave of absence.
Come on now, George. What's the matter? Can't you take a joke?
A bead of sweat started zigzagging down his face, mixing with the talcum powder. His lips continued to work, but now no words came out. Because this thing coming towards him, this wasn't a comical little dwarf. This was death.
NBC is bringing you Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
NBC. Enjoy the very best in radio. Be sure that you dial and write. Seems like the very best in radio. Morning, noon, and night is from this station. Morning, noon, and night.
And now back to Night Beat and Randy Stone.
George the Dwarf was passing in front of me on his way to the big guy who'd loused up his romance with Julie the jukebox girl. The knife glinted in his hand and he didn't even know that I was there. The only other person in all the world existed for him at that moment was a heavily perspiring fat man. Then as George came just a little closer, I lunged.
Let me go!
I twisted his arm back until the knife clattered to the floor. And I reached down for it as George tore loose and ran out of the door.
How do you like that little character trying to knife me? I'm going to call a cop so fast.
Wouldn't that be a little awkward, seeing how the joint here is slightly illegal?
Well, one thing I'm going to do. I'm going to tell this Jane on the jukebox who she's dealing with. I'm going to tell her this crazy punk's liable.
Mister. You even say howdy to that girl, and I might decide to find George and give him back this knife. I found George all right, slumped against his newsstand, all through wanting to kill anybody. I told him I'd see the cops and maybe they'd say it was okay if George paid for all the damage to that sports store and behave himself from now on. That didn't make him feel much better because it was getting awfully close to 2 o'clock and his meeting with Julie. I told him that I'd call Julie and inform her that he'd suddenly come down with a slight case of bubonic plague or something. I got the name of the company off the jukebox in the after-hours joint. The Acme Music Company. I found a phone booth, reached for a coin, and instead came up with a card that said, "If your show can stand a boost, ask for the lad they call John Bruce." And John's beautiful, phony face smiling up at me. All of a sudden, I was looking for the phone number at the bottom of the card, and then I began dialing like mad. That's got to be her.
Which one?
Coming down the street. The green hat, the sprig of violets. Yep.
Wow. This is going to be a distinct pleasure, baby.
Oh, just remember what you're supposed to do, baby. You walk past, you nod, and you keep walking.
What's the mystery all about? You can level with Brucey, boy.
$10, no questions asked. That was the agreement.
Well, can I at least mumble some quote about...
You open your mouth for anything but breathing. And...
Okay, okay.
She's almost reached the corner. Move. I stepped back to the paper stand where George was waiting. Together we watched Julie and John Bruce approach each other. Mr. Tchaikovsky never had it so good. She was really something out of body beautiful. As the two approached, George's hand unconsciously fastened on my arm. Now Julie and John were passing each other, their eyes meeting. George's hand began to tighten.
Julie. Oh, how beautiful. How beautiful.
Julie nodded to John Bruce, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw little George nod in return. For one sickening moment, I thought Bruce was going to open his mouth and go into a monologue, but somehow he controlled himself. They passed each other and went on. I looked down at George. His eyes were shining.
It was me. What I said to her, pouring out my heart, that brought her here tonight.
Sure it did.
Yeah. But why couldn't it really have been me? Why couldn't it have been me, Mr. Stone?
Ask the stars. Maybe they had an answer for you, Georgie. Me, I had work to do. I still had my story to find. Somewhere among the waiters, folding their tuxedos away, yawning as they changed into their street clothes. Somewhere among the jazz musicians, their faces waxen with fatigue, their shirt collars soaked in sweat, but still reaching for that beautiful, pure note. Somewhere in the police wagon, screaming insanely down the street. Somewhere in the yellow lights of the General Hospital, the mile of empty warehouses, a strip of greasy piers, a desolate park, in an alley, on a street corner. Somewhere in the night, my story was waiting for me. And now, that was all that mattered. By morning, I'd forgotten all about George and Julie and John Bruce. I'd finished my column and I'd gone home to snooze. Only my saga of the jukebox wasn't ended. It had only just begun. Oh. Yeah.
Hiya. Did I wake you up? It's after 10 a.m.
Well, what do you know? What do you want, Bruce?
I do okay.
Oh, you are magnificent. I'll see you around.
Oh, wait a minute, Randy.
Yeah.
The broad.
Yeah.
Friend of yours?
No.
Well, then what was that routine? You got old Johnny Boy guessing.
Well, good for Johnny Boy. See you around.
Randy, look, as long as she's not a friend, like they say, where can I locate this kid? Maybe we'll have a couple of laughs together.
Uh-uh.
No kidding, baby. Where can I find her?
Goodbye now. Yeah, when you're in my racket, when you deal with these characters on the night beat, brother, you've got to be prepared for the totally unexpected. Johnny Boy had fallen for the lady of the jukebox like a ton of bricks. Of course, he couldn't come right out and say it plain and simple. He had to ham it right up to the hilt. But I knew the score. And from then on, he haunted me night and day.
Ah, come on, Randy. Who is she? Where can I find her? Give the girl a break, huh?
He'd corner me on the street, at the newspaper, at my home.
Who is she, Randy? Come on, be a pal. What's wrong with me looking her up and giving her a little attention?
Day after day after day.
Where can I find her, Randy? What's the big mystery?
For a while, I even enjoyed it. He was sweating, and on him, it looked good. But I guess this morning, I just wasn't in the mood. I'd come down to the office around 5 a.m. And any newspaper office that time of day is a pretty sad affair. Cleaning women sloshing their way up and down the aisle. The gray, listless dawn flat against the windows, the empty desks. And me with one of those real sour little tales to write about a bum they'd found behind some garbage cans on Skid Row. A bum with a Distinguished Service Cross pinned to the pocket of his filthy shirt. One of those gallant young gods that we swore we'd never forget. Yeah, I was feeling Jim Dandy as I sat down to my typewriter and I whipped a hunk of paper into the roller. And then I saw John Bruce standing in the shadows across the room from me.
Hello, Randy.
Look, friend, I'm not in the mood this morning. I've got work to do.
Randy, you've got to listen to me.
They found him a little after midnight behind a wine shop.
Randy, you've got to tell me where I can find him.
Just another bum sleeping it off.
Randy, listen to me. You've got to tell me where...
Look, Buster, I'm telling you nothing. You understand that? One dame is going to escape the famed John Bruce charm. It's a very small tragedy. Now, clear out of here.
If you'll only listen to me, please.
I'm slightly bored with listening to you, Mr. Bruce. I'm even more bored with looking at you, Mr. Bruce. You're so phony it sticks out like measles, Mr. Bruce, from your crisp, curly hair right down to your beautifully polished shoes. If this comes as a great surprise...
No great surprise, Randy. Since when can a guy keep that kind of news from himself?
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm pretty tired.
I don't know what it is. I won't even try to explain it. I can't explain it to myself. It's that success bug. It's dog eat dog. Anything goes as long as you make it. And why do you have to make it? Does it say so in the Constitution?
Look.
But about her, I'm not putting on any act about her, Randy. I'm a big boy now. Love at first sight. Am I kidding? Listen, Randy. We just exchanged a look, maybe 5 seconds. And until the day I die, I won't be able to forget it. I guess that sounds like some more of Johnny Boy's routine, huh?
No. Go on.
Go on? What can I tell you? How do you explain it? But in those few seconds, I saw something I've been looking for all my life, Randy.
Something genuine. Something real. Something... Well, maybe I saw my own salvation, Randy. Or maybe I was just kidding myself, selling myself a bill of goods. But I got to find out. I got to see her again, talk to her. Maybe the minute she opens her mouth, the dream will come tumbling down like Humpty Dumpty. I don't know.
I don't think so.
Now, where is she, Randy?
The Acme Music Company. Only take your time. She doesn't show up until night. I don't know why I did it. Maybe it was something I saw in John Bruce's eyes that made me feel if I didn't tell him, well, it would have been a bum deal for Julie. I wanted to reach George right away, try to explain what I'd done, but I didn't know where to look for him except at his newsstand. In my world of the night, all you ever know about anyone is where they are right now. I didn't sleep much that day. Making George understand wasn't going to be any cinch. But he had to know that this had been a sick thing that could only hurt him in the end. That night, I hurried right onto his newsstand, only he wasn't around. I started worrying, and on a hunch, I went across the street to the after-hours joint. The door was ajar. I went in. He was there, squatting in front of the jukebox, listening to his song again. His back was to me. Song ended, and I searched my mind like crazy for the right words. He was fumbling with some coins, and he slipped one of them into the jukebox.
Like it, darling?
Oh, you know I do. Every time I hear it, I see you again. So beautiful.
You're pretty beautiful yourself, mister.
Julie, it's wonderful to hear you say that.
I backed out quick. I didn't get it. Why hadn't she gone with John Bruce? I hopped a cab for the Acme Music Company, a dilapidated office and a loft on Huron Street. Front door was open, so I went on inside. An empty desk with papers scattered all over, but nobody around. I went into a dark hallway marked No Admittance. Ahead of me was a lighted glass door with the word Studio painted on it. I started for it when someone came running up behind me.
Hey, you, can't you read the sign? No admittance. I thought that was very clear.
Well, there wasn't anybody at the desk.
You're telling me something I don't know? Quitting without a minute's notice. That's a fine thing, huh?
Mister.
But wait, that's Sally. She'll want a reference someday. I'll give her a reference, all right. Now, come on.
Sally, is she the one who quit?
Without a minute's notice. A jerk comes popping in. I was working in bank. Next thing you know, she's waltzing out of here with him. But that's okay. Someday she'll want a reference.
Sally is a dark-haired girl, beautifully built.
So she's beautifully built. Big deal. Come on, mister. I got 50 things to do.
Then that would be Julie working in the studio up ahead.
So?
Well, do you mind if I peek in through the door, and then I'll go?
If you want to peek, all right, peek. With Julie, I'm not worried about her running off. With Julie, I'm safe.
Yes, he was safe with Julie. As I looked through the glass door, I thought, sure, it figures. Two can play the same game. The dwarf had had his John Bruce, and Julie had her Sally. Julie couldn't have shown up for a meeting with George even if she wanted to, because I very much doubt that Julie could have lifted her 350 pounds out of that chair. Huge, sprawling Julie, working like mad at her switchboard with its flashing lights from jukeboxes all over the city. And then while I watched as she answered one call, something happened. Her eyes lit up in a strange and wonderful way. And then she flicked a switch that played a certain record for a certain jukebox, and her eyes became even more bright. I didn't have to hear the rest of the record. She was playing their song for her guy, George. And all of a sudden, I realized how right George was. Julie was beautiful. Yeah. Yeah, that's how it is when you walk the night beat. You always know that if you walk far enough and long enough, and if you keep your eyes open and you listen very carefully, sooner or later in the darkness, you'll find the city's heart. Yeah, yeah. Copy, boy.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy, is produced and directed by Warren Lewis. Tonight's story was written by Larry Marcus, with music by Robert Armbruster. The part of John Bruce was played by Bill Conrad. Jeff Corey was George. Others in tonight's cast were Betty Lou Gerson, Ray Hartman, and Eddie Fields. Frank Lovejoy can currently be seen co-starring with Joan Crawford and Robert Young in Warner Brothers' Goodbye, My Fancy. Listen next week at this time and every week as Randy Stone searches through the city for the strange stories waiting for him in the darkness. Night Beat came to you from Hollywood. Join Steve Mitchell on another dangerous assignment tonight on NBC.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Radio Detective Story Hour. I'll be back next time with another drama of suspense.